Landlords, whether you own one rental property or hundreds, you want to run a profitable business because your future depends on it. Education is the key to opening doors. Your success depends heavily on knowing and complying with dozens of rules while balancing the need of the business for profit. This show lets you listen in on conversations that various landlords have regarding real stories that are posted on our forums. Now come join in on the conversation. And happy landlording.
Good morning and welcome. Cassandra Taggart is the president of Real Property Management Last Frontier, a property management company here in Anchorage. She is also the president of the Landlord's Almanac, one of the largest landlord clubs in the country dedicated to networking, supporting, and training professional landlords. And she is the author of the popular book, Pain or Profit, Secrets of Profitable Rental Property Investors. She joins us now. Good morning, Cassandra. Well, we've got a lot to talk about this morning. You know, according to the Associated Press, over 23 million people nationwide are at risk of being evicted. That is moratoriums enacted because of the coronavirus expire and the courts reopen. Experts predict the problem will only get worse in the coming weeks, with 30 million people now unemployed, and the uncertainty surrounding whether Congress will end up extending the additional $400 to $600 in weekly unemployment benefits that expired back in July. Today in Alaska is the topic of our first conversation with Cassandra. You know, those national numbers are frightening. How much do they reflect what is going on here in South Central today?
Alaska's always been a slightly different trend than the lower 48. So you have the lower 48 showing more people not paying rent compared to here. Based on a lot of the stats and surveys, we're doing better than they are, but we're still going to find out very soon, because they're coming in waves of how many people can't pay their rent.
Has there been a renewal of the federal eviction moratorium that expired back on July 25th?
No, there hasn't been a renewal at all. It looks like there is, based on how the president has made an order to the HUD requesting them to look at it. But at this time, there is no extension of the CARES Act, which did expire back in July 25th. And here soon, court cases can start getting heard on properties that are federally backed.
Are Alaskans able to apply for any type of rental assistance payments that are available locally?
Yeah, there's actually more funds that just came through that just got announced like a week ago. If you call 211, there's another round of about $1 million sitting there. If the tenant was to call the 211 and ask for assistance, fill out the paperwork and qualify, you actually can get some funds from that. And there's still that money. And then also Alaska Housing has their fund. And people who have already applied, they're working through the paperwork and slowly releasing the funds to those that finish their paperwork. So that's wrapping up, which is going to really help with a lot of tenants.
Well, that's the first good news we've heard in a long time. Cassandra, according to a new survey by Apartment List, 32% of Americans had unpaid housing bills at the beginning of August, and 20% owed more than $1,000. What's your assessment as to the plight of South Central renters? Are they holding their own today?
From all the stats that we are able to gather, because you have to remember, in Alaska, we don't have like a central database of who has paid, who has not paid, how many vacancies there are. It's all based on performing surveys and getting kind of a consensus of what is going on in the area. Certain cities in the lower 48 does have around 32%. Some have 0% because the city is acting normal and booming and growing. In Alaska, based on everything I could gather between surveys with other property managers and surveys with landlords, we're nowhere near 32%. We're somewhere around maybe 10% that hasn't paid. And then, of course, you've got to do the math of the utilities, because utilities have clauses right now, which is allowing people to do payment plans before shutoffs happen. I don't know what the utility numbers are, but we are receiving the same normal notices of tenants that are slow paying on their utilities. We haven't seen an uptick in those numbers yet.
Has any relief been established for local landlords, and are they having to shoulder a large portion of the financial upheaval themselves?
What's happening is, the more we allow the tenants to fall behind, stay behind, it makes it so difficult for them to even have an opportunity to catch up, because not only did they have a reduced income, then they got to make payments on their normal rent plus their behind rent just to try to survive and get this turned around. So what's happening is it's forcing the landlords to carry that debt, basically, and carry it forward and for several months to try to stay alive. And landlords don't want their properties vacant right now, so they are wanting to work with the tenants to create payment plans, but that's putting the burden on the landlord. So we're talking anywhere from $2,000, $6,000 that's automatically overnight put on a landlord. And they're having to use reserves, savings, shoulder that. And as long as things start opening back up soon, they'll be okay. But if this continues with the shortage of the funds, they're going to start having problems with paying their own utilities and their own vendors and plumbers, which then creates that trickle effect of where the dollar goes when someone pays rent.
You know, so many renters want a moratorium that would stop evictions, say, until September. But wouldn't that still be a loss in the millions of dollars to local landlords?
I don't think canceling rent is a smart idea, because that's going to create a whole nother layer of effect all the way to the bond and stock market. And that's not something that I think the powers that be that makes these decisions is willing to take that risk and start bailing out the bond companies as well. So some of the ideas that might be better is to give rent relief by actually paying the rent for the tenants during interim cycles, or finding ways to get them access to funds that are available out there to do it. If they start trying to do more loans, all that's doing is kicking the can down the road with tenants, where they're forever in debt and never have a chance, which isn't fair either.
There are approximately 43,811 renter-occupied units in the Anchorage Bull. Cassandra, what happens to the local economy when people can't pay their rent?
43,000! And even though Anchorage is small, when you start thinking about how many rentals there are and you start realizing there's 43,000 of them that's in this position or in a potential position, that gives you kind of an idea of how big it is. But then if you narrow it down, all the way down, we're only looking at a small fraction of that 43,000 that isn't able to pay. Based on stats, we're showing about 10% can't pay. And then you've also got stats that our vacancy rate is sitting around 5-6%. So if you do all the math, you're looking at about 5 million a month that's short on rent. Of course, assistance funds have participated in keeping that balance current. But if assistance funds become no longer available and jobs aren't becoming available again for those that lost their jobs, it's going to be a big concern going into the winter months.
According to a recent Anchorage Economic Development presentation, Anchorage's job numbers could be in the negative territory until the year 2023. How should those numbers influence a buyer on what property to purchase these days?
That's actually a really good question, because you want to see where jobs are strong, and you always want to buy rental properties based on that concept. Because if you buy rentals based on, oh, here's a spreadsheet, and all you do is focus on your little spreadsheet for that one property, the problem is you can't see that the jobs that normally would rent the property you're looking at would be getting disappeared, for example. So in the future, you're going to have issues with that building. So you want to buy buildings that will attract the people that do have jobs, will have jobs, and are stable within their jobs. An easy way to explain that, Dave, is by looking at what I like to call middle market. We rate our properties between A, B, C, and then there's a D classification. A is like those really expensive, fine detail built homes, and those typically rent around $2,000 and higher, typically. And then you've got your middle market, which typically is like the $1,300 to $1,800 price point. They typically are in that group. And those are renting fast. We can't get enough inventory of those. And that's because that job market at this time, and probably for a little bit longer, is very stable, very secure. And those people are just working at home and doing their thing. But the market that tends to rent in the C category tends to be the workers that had second jobs or primary jobs at hotels and restaurants and travel and that kind of stuff that is experiencing a large portion of the job loss. not all of it, but a large portion of it. So you have to be careful with what building you're buying, because you don't want to buy one which is full of individuals that have experienced the job losses, because you're going to be taking on that debt for a while.
Anchorage was at the end of a four-year-long recession. We thought we were just about ready to come out of it. Then COVID attacked, putting thousands out of work. What is your best advice for investors today, investors like yourself?
Basically, my advice right now is you can still make money as an investor. You just have to think about it a little further than here's my spreadsheet of my property. I can tell you we're in a market where I wouldn't be flipping just yet if you're a flipper kind of investor. If you're a buy and hold investor, I would recommend moving towards or shifting towards middle market if you can. I think those are going to be the safer ones for a while. And if you're a person who, likes to buy, reorganize the management, reorganize the property to where it forces the appreciation to go up on the property and then sell it, those are still deals that could be had in the C category properties. You just have to be very, very, very careful of location, 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 as always. The other thing that I have as an advice is I had a phone call about 2 weeks ago with a person, and I think this is relevant to most of our audience. They had a single family home that's very rare to find, very rare to obtain. It's beautiful. And it is in that price point of like 2,000 to 3,000 price point. Here's the thing. They looked at that property and they said, well, if I sold it, where would I put the money? Well, they thought, well, I could put it in stocks, or I could put it here, or I could put it in annuities or whatever, right? Well, what happened in their decision was, yeah, I could sell the house and move this paid off property into one of those areas, but I'm not going to get the cash flow that I am getting on the rental, even though the rental cash flow might have dropped because of COVID. They're still getting a house that they can touch, see, and drive by. They're still getting rental income, and they can still do evictions because it's a paid off property. And they're going to get $2,000 a month on that property. Then they get all their tax adjustments that they've been getting on it. So it makes more money to just leave it as a rental than to start getting worried and getting out of the rental market and moving it to something else that might be more unstable or less cash flow. So a lot of the landlords we've been talking to, that's what they're doing. In fact, yesterday we had another conversation with another landlord who had a duplex, and they're like, I'm going to sell it, I'm scared. And then they started doing the numbers and they realized there's nowhere else I could put this money that is safer. So they're canceling putting things on the market and they're keeping it as a rental and signing longer contracts with us as a manager. So I think that's something that a lot of people need to realize, is that even though it's scary being a landlord right now, in some situations, it's actually safer to be a landlord than putting it somewhere else on the money.
Forecasters are saying that we should prepare for a sizable economic shock. How should we be bracing ourselves for the next, say, 90 to 100 days?
I think the best tip that I can give, which is what a lot of us are doing, is read and research as much as you can. So that way, when you go to make a decision on whatever decision you're going to make, it's very well thought out. Don't just make a fear decision. Make as much of a well-informed decision that you can. Like the example that I was just giving, they sat there and thought, well, if I moved it here, what's it going to look like? If I moved it here, what's it going to look like? Well, it's safer to keep it here, and that's the decision that they made. But they only made that decision because they talked to a lawyer, they talked to a CPA, they talked to a tax strategist person. Then they talked to us to forecast what the rents are like for their individual property. Then they talked to a real estate agent to determine value of that property. So you have to talk to your whole team. Just like if we talk about the habits in the book, you have to talk to your whole team to get a well-informed decision, then, or well-informed information, then get to be able to make a well-informed decision so you can brace the next 90 days just fine.
Landlords. Whether you set out to be a landlord or not, you need to make renting your home as simple and profitable as possible. Let Real Property Management take care of everything for you. Go to rpmlastfrontier.com for property management done properly.
We have a lot of friends in the banking industry. When you talk to somebody who loans money to investors, what is their attitude in 2020?
It's kind of all over the board, because you've got in banking, you've got different layers to how they make their decisions with underwriting. So that whole world is changing day in and day out. What I can tell you is a lot of bankers that have been talking to us has been saying they're having crazy amounts of refis. They're having crazy amounts of real estate transactions because everyone's rushing to get things sold because they think it's a peak value, peak amount, peak whatever, and inventory is low. So they're maximizing their value of selling right now. And what's happening is it's causing sales to get delayed because appraisers are backed up. Everybody's backed up. It's so super busy. And then you've got the other kind of bankers where people who have cash are just holding it. They're keeping it in their savings account, doing short little CDs. They're just holding the cash waiting. And I've got another investor who sold all of their buildings over the last 8 months right before the COVID. And he was about to purchase again. Then he went, nope, I'm going to wait until I can really maximize my dollars. So a lot of people are still doing the wait and researching phase right now.
Cassandra, what is the key to getting back on the path to economic recovery here in Alaska? If you had to say, if you had to plan, if you were leading the state to an economic recovery.
I am very hopeful that the economic teams and the economy people, or the economists, the people that look at the stats and the trends, continue to work together to help find that answer. I would like to have an answer, but unfortunately, I'm not an expert in economy. I'm just an expert in knowing rentals. But what I can say, though, is I'm very, very, very hopeful that all the economists that are amazing in this town, the ones that are at the banks, the ones that are in downtown partnership, all over the place, they're coming together and having those side conversations, trying to find what it is that could be the fastest route to get us back on track. I think a lot of it's going to be around jobs, but that's going to be a hard conversation since some people, some industries can't even open. And I'm hoping that they're talking, trying to find solutions to give advice to those that are power of bees. In the housing world, what I can say is that a lot of the industry people are coming together and we're having lots of phone conversations about, okay, what is working in your side? What's not working in your side? What trends are you seeing on your side? What trends are you seeing on your side? Because the faster we can get information and data and stats, the sooner we'll be able to make a decision to try to kickstart over the economy and get us up and going again. The only thing I can think of is we're still in that phase of researching, thinking, and gathering data and as relevant of data as we can so we can make decisions. I think that's the fastest answer to trying to solve this.
Would you like to see a vaccine first before anything else? Try to get that into the mix and see how that affects society and then the economy?
That's a difficult decision. I don't want to be like back in the swine flu where they made a vaccine and it was worse than not having it.
Right, right.
I don't want to be in that situation like history. History does tend to repeat itself, so I hope we don't go into that phase of all of this.
We have talked about this before. Do you expect a tsunami of evictions that has been forewarned?
I do not. Well, at least for Anchorage, I do not. The reason why I say that is a couple factors are going into that. Landlords don't want vacant properties right now. They don't want to be showing and getting out and being potentially catching the virus, right? We also have it where majority of the tenants and majority of the landlords want to do payment arrangements. And we also have a lot of people that are actively applying for funds and actively looking for new jobs, trying to do it. So I don't think it's going to be this massive wave all at one time. What I do think, though, is that those that were intentionally not going to pay are definitely at threat. Those that cannot get funds, cannot get a job because they may be in that horrible situation of everything compiled together at once. Those tend to be the people that when they fall behind 1 month, they're behind for several months because they just can't pull it out. Those are the guys I'm worried about, but it's not a huge amount of people. It's just a small group. But that group is of concern because we don't want them on the streets either.
You yourself are a landlord dealing with COVID issues. Just how many options do you really have when dealing with cash-strapped renters?
There's quite a few options. You can get a little creative. Some of the landlords have done this. I'm not doing this, but some of the landlords have done this where they say, hey, we're all cash strapped. I gotta no longer pay for lawn mowing. So can you start mowing the yard? And we'll use that to adjust the rent for the next 3 months. I mean, you were going to kind of have to get creative a little bit if you could do some trade bartering a little bit, but please make sure you follow a lot of rules with that. There's also some landlords that have been able to reduce rent for short periods of time. There's been landlords that went to tenants and said, hey, let's just take this last 3 months and ignore it. And we'll just sign a new lease with this other rent amount, which is basically creating a payment plan. So the landlord gets security that the tenant will be there for a while, long enough to pay their back balance. And then the tenant basically gets a reset on the clock. So that's a pretty cool trick that's helping a lot of people as well. So there's a lot of options. You just have to get creative.
We have talked a lot about the home rental market and landlords during the pandemic, but let's not forget about the commercial property owner. Are commercial property owners going to have to work harder at convincing people to come back into their commercial buildings?
It is going to be a big shift, and landlords that are in the commercial space are going to have a whole different type of conversation. Some of them are basically, how do you handle the common areas? How often do you do cleaning? How often do you handle, you know, the stairwells and the elevators? What responsibility are you willing to take on, and which one are you pushing back to your tenants? And the other one you have to really worry about in the commercial space is how to retain your tenant. Because what's happening is all the business owners that are renting commercial spaces right now are realizing, oh, we could work from home and reduce my utility bills by X, reduce my computer staff, my internet bill, all these bills that we have from having to run an office. I can reduce it by almost half. They're still going to want an office. They're just not going to want as big of an office possibly, because they know that they can send the staff home and let them use their power and food and all that kind of stuff. And it's one way that business owners are looking at it to try to fit in their budget. So as a landlord, you might want to think about that when you're wanting to push them for maximized rent, because you may push them out the door because they're looking at, a lot of them are looking at some leases that are about to end. And they're looking at it as an opportunity to move and downsize because they can, because the economy just forced their hand to prove that they can. I also know that some of the commercial landlords have to really set aside some budgets for upgrading the facility because, let's face it, Anchorage is a little old. And we need to update some of our stuff. So, like, there's a landlord the other day that really wanted to rent the space, but the tenant had to have these special power outlets throughout the facility. So they needed to upgrade it to make it happen. And that wasn't a cheap bill because it was updating wiring and stuff like that. But that's what was needed to get a tenant attracted to fill a space. So you're going to have to look at your facility from a perspective of, does it fit for the new workspace? Does it fit with the new technology? Does it fit with the new needs that they're going to need for the demand on computers and that kind of stuff? So, yeah, you're going to have to be more flexible, that's for sure.
There is a new term being added to our vernacular. It's called co-working spaces. Are we going to see a lot more of this type of overhaul of existing commercial properties?
We are going to see quite a bit of that, mostly because when co-working became a thing, oh, I would say in the early 2000s, it kind of became this hip-hop thing that everyone wanted to try. And then a lot of companies tried to go full force to it and then realized they couldn't shrink all the way down to just co-working. And they still needed a little office that could store their files and stuff like that. So this new version of co-working that's coming out right now is going to be very interesting because it comes with conference spaces, it comes with private offices while still sharing the space. So that way you can rent your office by the hour or by the month or whatever, and still have your space that you might need for that while, and then turn it off when you don't need to spend the money. And that's one way a lot of business owners are going to be looking at as a way to fix the budget, because they have to come up with the money somewhere, and it's probably not going to completely come from sales. So co-working is going to be a very hot, sad topic again, and I think a lot of landlords are going to have to consider looking at that space and figuring out how to differentiate themselves from the other ones that have already been made.
Do building owners have their work cut out for them in the redesigning of space and even airflow in a building?
Yeah, it's going to be expensive trying to figure that out. because we have to retrofit some of these buildings to be more modern, and we have to bring them more current in order to have the better airflows, because you're going to have more computer equipment, different kind of computer equipment. Wires are very hot when they're running, so you're going to have to think about airflows and ventilations. The list goes on and on with having to modify a space. So building a space like the co-work that's getting added downtown, it became obviously more costly than anticipated because it's first time to really have some technology here in Alaska. So there was a lot of like working with the big IT people trying to learn how to solve it here in Alaska. So it's a fun project to learn about and watch. And it's going to be a challenge going forward. But once a few models have been made, it's going to become a thing.
As the head of a large property management company yourself, have you been able to get a vision of the whole picture as to what the new today will eventually look like?
I'm starting to frame what it is. I've been participating in national groups with other property managers because we're in a franchise, so I get to talk to a whole bunch of other offices all over the nation. And then I've also been participating in a lot of summits and gatherings with other managers trying to say, okay, what's the new trend? Where are people going? What are people interested in? And of course, we're still waiting on stats and results. So a lot of this is what we think, not necessarily backed by any stats at this time. But for the tenants, what's starting to happen, which is a good thing for Alaska, is tenants are going, oh, this 600 square foot apartment that I used to live in used to work really well. But now that I'm working at home and it looks like I'm going to be working at home for a long time because my boss is going to be looking for a downsize on the commercial office, so I get to work at home more often. Yay, but I'm stuck in a 600 square foot apartment. So I'm going to want a bigger apartment so I can have a little office space separate from my home life. So that is going to be a bigger conversation in the residential space, which is nice because we built in Alaska for larger spaces in a lot of places. And then in the commercial space, you got to be very careful about the downsizing that's going to be taking place and the new demands that's going to be placed on business owners. So if I was in commercial, I would be very, very focused on what are these demands happening of business owners between regulations and how they do business, because you can find a way to build space to satisfy them.
Scott with Pioneer Floor Care is a longtime friend, business owner, and happens to have many rentals in the family. He falls into a category of what I would like to call hardworking, good people that provides great value for the price. As a result, Scott needs to be on your speed dial list. Since he and his family are landlords, they completely understand you need to have a variety of options when it comes to solving flooring problems. This is why Pioneer Floor Care is more than just a carpet cleaning company. They help with floor repairs, excessive water on the floor, creative options with odors, mildew mitigation, and many, many more. Give my friend Scott a call at Pioneer Floor Care.
Even the best landlords have questions, and we are asking them for Cassandra's best advice this morning. Cassandra, here is your first question. What is a reasonable amount of time for a landlord to respond to maintenance issues?
That's a really good one. Everybody has a different definition of that.
Yes.
A tenant's going to want, like, now. And then a landlord's going to be like, oh, wait, it's not in the budget. How long can I wait? Honestly, the best answer is rentals is a business, and how you respond as a business will define the results and the outcome. So if you want a business with top talent, top service, top everything, you want to already have had a vendor that's going to do that work and already had the money to do that work and have it done really fast. So like in under 3 days. However, sometimes you don't have that much control and it takes anywhere from 5 to 7 days. The landlords that tend to have a retention issue usually take weeks to get repairs finished. So you might want to find your balance that you're okay with based on the style of management for your property.
And here's your second question. Does an owner of a rental property have the right to visit the property unannounced at any time?
I remember a landlord once, they had hired us to do an eviction for them. And they literally put a ladder to the side of the building, went up the ladder, broke into a window to see if they were still in the property. No, you can't just up and harass a tenant and enter and visit whenever you want. We actually have this thing called a law. No, I'm kidding. The Landlord Tenant Act law it says that we have to give 24 hours. We have to serve a 24-hour notice to enter the property. Anytime we go faster than that in under 24 hours, it's purely for the purposes of an emergency, like water coming out the front door, for example.
Well, time to put on your investor hat with this question. Does the profitability of a property have to do with its type, fourplex, duplex, triplex? We are getting pre-approved to buy, but I have no idea what to buy. Any advice, Cassandra?
When you get into investing, I know a lot of people will start off with the spreadsheet mentality, which is, oh, here's the income, here's the expenses, voila, here's your cash flow, voila, it's the best property. And the more you add zeros to it, the more that cash flow at the bottom looks like it's going to get bigger and bigger, because the more units, the higher the dollar, the higher the zeros, the higher the cash flow, and the bigger the number. So go as big as you can to maximize your dollar. That advice works for a large portion of people as well. The problem is when you're a brand new landlord, you don't know what you like and don't like. You don't know if you hate having to knock on a door and say, pay your rent. You don't know if you can handle it when a tenant is screaming at you because something happened that you couldn't have predicted, but it happened and you're at fault because you're the landlord. You don't know if you can handle walking by the property every day, picking up the trash, which sometimes is diapers and tampons sitting on the side of the dumpster because they couldn't put it in the dumpster. You have to remember that there's another side to landlording that you may not even want to be a part of. So yeah, you could try to go big and go do those 10 plexes and 20 plexes, but those buildings require a whole different amount of time and a whole different amount of energy that you didn't anticipate was going to be required. If you go to something that's simple and safe, your cash flow is going to be much smaller, but you're probably never going to have to spend that much time on the property because it's just coasting. It's very simple. You're renting to tenants that mow their yard, not you have to tell them to mow their yard every 2 weeks. I think a large portion of deciding how big depends on your skill set and depends on your habits as a landlord and what you're capable of and what you're willing to do with your time.
Here's your next question. During this global pandemic, what types of rental income units are in demand these days?
So what's happening right now, and if you think about the history of like the Great Depression, and where in the Great Depression, everybody that lived in the outskirts started moving inward to the city to get jobs. Well, right now, because we got technology, people aren't moving into the city. They're actually kind of moving out of the city because they don't want to be around people to get more virus, and they can work from wherever now. The outskirts are doing very well. The properties where they don't have common hallways are doing very well. And the properties that are middle market are doing very, very well. So the B properties are renting within hours, if not days. There are actually some of them this last month. We had some bidding wars on a few of our properties, and those are the ones that the tenants want right now. And if you remember, tenants only have short leases, like 6 months to 1 year, so they can pick up and move whenever they want. And a lot of those leases, because we've been in this pandemic since March, a lot of those leases are ending or just went month to month, and they can move now, and they are.
Here's an interesting question. What is your definition of a shark lender?
Shark lender. I like to describe a shark lender as a person who will lend you cash for whatever it is you're trying to do. And it's going to be just on the edge or maximum edge of what's allowed to charge for interest and points and all this stuff. And it's not the smartest loan to use, because the smartest loan to use is the one like a normal mortgage, because you can get a 6% interest. But a uncollateralized loan from what I like to call the sharks, they'll charge points through the nose, interest rates to the max. So instead of getting a 6% mortgage, you're going to get, let's say, a 12% with 5 points on the back and the front. And so you're going to spend so much money in paying your lender just because you didn't have access or credit to normal money. So it's basically not normal money. And because of that, it's going to cost you.
That is the first time I've ever heard that definition. Thank you so much. What is the best way you advertise for an upcoming vacant unit?
So on an upcoming vacant unit, we don't right now or anything on the market until we know that it is rent ready. That's partly because we have to keep up with the regulation about carpet cleaning and giving those guys time to clean the carpets. We have a policy about professional cleaning of the unit. So we got to make sure all those people go through the property before we ever put it on the market. And then we take amazing pictures so that way it's got its best foot put forward, right? Just like you do for an interview, you want your best foot, your best clothes, your best shoes, your best cologne before you go to do your interview. So we do that with the renters as well, our rental properties as well. Then we use a series of marketings that syndicate out to hundreds and hundreds of websites like Facebook and Craigslist, and you've got, you know, Hot Pads and Oodles and our website and so forth. So it's multiple websites, and many of them are paid websites now in order to do proper marketing.
I think this is an interesting question and timely. Do you have any opinion on Angie's List?
Angie's List is really a good place to find vendors such as plumbers, handyman, electricians, that kind of stuff. Just be careful because Angie's List is another place that does, how do you say this? They need ads, they need money to perform. So people that are there are probably people that have paid to be there. So you're only getting whoever's willing to pay. The guys in this town that are so good, they usually don't have to pay for some of that advertising because they're so good and they have strong word of mouth. So good old-fashioned free Google is a good place.
Here's another question. I'm looking to purchase new coin-op washers and dryers for my property. Are coins like cash becoming obsolete? And have you heard of anything better than coins for the near future?
Because of the COVID, the coin-op situation has been a big topic. Some landlords literally just up and closed their laundry facilities, so they didn't have to worry about the exchange of coins and potentially spreading the virus, right? So some literally just closed. Some went and got new washer and dryers because they've collapsed and they can go over to places like Reliable Appliance and get more used ones that are out there. But the way of the future is actually like those little badges, those little cards where they can just swipe their card and they can get their money and it's all digital. So instead of doing cash, the wave of the future is moving over towards digital. You can go to stores like Allison Peterson, the Meter and Appliance Company is another one, to actually order those appliances or order the parts to be able to convert your appliance. Me personally, because they're so affordable, I would just buy a new whole set instead of trying to rig an old one. But the way of the future is move to the cards because it's faster money. You're not having to pay somebody to pick it up. You're not having to worry about people robbing the machine. On and on and on with all the headaches of the washing machine.
So cards are the future. Joe Cassandra, I went back and reread your book in an attempt to mesh the reality of today with the words that you wrote not all that long ago. A lot has happened to the world since you first published this book. You know, we talked about finding quality tenants that stand out, but the pandemic has devastated even the quality tenant. In this new age, what's a quality tenant to be?
It's a very good question because you have to change your definition of what a quality tenant is these days a little bit. A good example that I can give is thinking about their job requirement. So if, for example, they just started a job a month ago versus a tenant who's been on the job for 2 years. Obviously, the one that's been on the job for 2 years is much more stable than someone who's been on the job for 1 month, 2 months. So one of the requirements you could do with your application is say they must be in the same job industry or job with a minimum of 12 months or 24 months to try to find and weed out to a quality tenant that can pay consistently because they have a consistent job. So that's a trick that you could do to find those quality tenants.
And one more question. You know, it's been said that COVID will be a part of our life for some time until it is completely eradicated. If that is true, do you foresee rents being flexible as the virus ebbs and flows through society?
I do think that the rents are going to go up and down depending on the price point of the property. Certain price points are going to be dropping and certain price points are going to be like bidding wars because every tenant wants it now.
They do. How can investors find out more about joining the Landlords Club?
Yeah, so there's two ways. One is the website, which is thelandlordsalmanac.com. The one that's most popular is the Facebook group, the private Facebook group where everyone is, and you can join there. It says the Landlord's Almanac /Alaska, so you can identify it.
And how about if our listeners want you to be their property management? Where can they get a hold of you and talk about your services at Real Property Management of Anchorage?
So Real Property Management really is the way to go. Our website is a great way to read and learn about the services. So it's Real RPM. LastFrontier.com.
All right. Well, Cassandra, we want to thank you for your knowledge, your passion, and your guidance over the last hour. You are, as I'm sure our listeners now know, an invaluable resource and experienced advisor for those who are investing in real estate and taking their first step towards success.
Thanks so much for listening today. I appreciate it a lot. If you enjoyed this episode and many more to come, then start jumping in on the conversation. Come to our website, sign up, and start chit-chatting with others about your stories or help others through their stories. The website is www.thelandlordsalmanac.com. Hope to see you there, and I'll begin chatting with you as well.